Morning. Reading from Exodus chapter 23, verse 1 to 8. I just realized I have to put my glasses on. I didn't think I did. You shall not spread a false report. You shall not join hands with a wicked man to be a malicious witness. You shall not fall in with many to do evil, nor shall you bear witness in a lawsuit, siding with the many so as to pervert justice, nor shall you be partial to a poor man in his lawsuit. If you meet your enemy's ox or his donkey going astray, you shall bring it back to him. If you see the donkey of one who hates you lying down under its burden, you shall refrain from leaving him with it. You shall rescue it with him. You shall not pervert the justice to your poor in his lawsuit. Keep far from a false charge, and do not kill the innocent and righteous, for I will not acquit the wicked. And you shall take no bribe, for a bribe blinds the clear-sighted and subverts the cause of those who are in the right. And reading from Proverbs, chapter 6, verse 16 and the first part of 19. There are six things that the Lord hates, seven that are an abomination to him: a false witness who bears out lies,
you'd go to the first slide, please. You'll see a picture of a man. Both pictures are of the same man. Does anybody recognize who he is? There's a hint in the background of the younger picture of him. Nobody recognizes him. I'm the only fan here? Oh, this man is Jim Unger, the creator of the cartoon strip Herman that was ran for 18 years in the 1970s and the 1980s in 600 newspapers in 25 countries around the world. I have all six treasuries. I'm a fan. And in the fourth treasury, he has a comic strip that ran on a Sunday about a person being administered the oath in a court of law. And you'll see the dialogue on the screen. But in the comic, in the first screen, you've got the person, the court reporter or the court clerk, and he's asking the person the witness to raise their hand, and he says, repeat after me, I swear to tell the truth. And then the witness says, I swerve to smell de soup. And then the next phrase is the whole truth, and the witness says, de toll booth. And then you've got the court reporter, and nothing but the truth, and the witness says, a nut sing on the roof. And then the very last frame is where the reporter says, now tell us in your own words exactly what happened. And the joke, the whole point is that if a man cannot repeat the oath milliseconds after it being said correctly, then how can he be a witness? How could he ever give an accurate report of what actually went on? He just simply can't, and that's the point of the joke. But according to Proverbs chapter 6, verse 19, giving a false witness is no laughing matter. Of the seven things that are an abomination to God, one of them is a person who gives false witness. Now, earlier in this Communion Sunday series, which I haven't done for a couple months because we did something different on those Communion Sundays in January and February, but earlier, if you go back up, we went and we looked at the second thing that God hates, which was lying lips or a lying tongue. But now as we come to the sixth one, God separates, he highlights, he brings out separately from the general category of lying lips a specific form of lying, a person who gives false witness. And he detests it so much that this giving of false witness, God singled out as he gave the short form of the covenant to the Israelites at Mount Sinai. He gave a form of forbidding it in the Ten Commandments, where Exodus 20:16 says, "You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor." This is a very serious thing. God hates the person who gives false witness, it says here. No laughing matter, no joke here at all. So let's go to the gate. In the ancient Near East, where towns or cities were walled, that is, they had a wall, you obviously had to enter through a gate, and that would be the main thoroughfare for people to go in and out. And that would be a place of congregating, where people would meet, and markets would spring up at the gates. But also, the city gates were an area where the elders of the town or the elders of the city or the leaders would meet, and they would do the issues of justice, issues of legal and civil action. For example, if you were to turn to Deuteronomy chapter 21, and there on the screen is a number of different places where the gate is mentioned as a place of legal and civil action. But Deuteronomy 21, verses 18 to 21 says this: "If a man has a stubborn and rebellious son who will not obey the voice of his father or the voice of his mother, and though they discipline him, will not listen to them, then his father and his mother shall take hold of him and bring him to the elders of his city at the gate of the place where he lives, and they shall say to the elders of his city, 'This our son is stubborn and rebellious. He will not obey our voice. He is a glutton and a drunkard.' Then all the men of the city shall stone him to death with stones. So you shall purge the evil from your midst, and all Israel shall hear and fear." And so again, that's just one of several references where judicial proceedings, court proceedings, legal proceedings, criminal proceedings would occur at the city gate, or the village or the town gate. And it is in this context of the elders and the officials deciding court cases and legal cases that this commandment is about not bearing false witness against your neighbor, or involves the context of a person who is giving false witness by pouring out lies. But let's make it clear. This person whom God hates, who is giving false witness, this isn't someone who, due to being mixed up or being confused, mistakenly gives false witness. No, this is about the person who intentionally, knowingly stands up and lies about what really happened. There are two other verses in Proverbs make this clear. Verse 17 of chapter 12, which says, "Whoever speaks the truth gives honest evidence, but a false witness utters deceit." And then in chapter 14, verse 5 of Proverbs, "A faithful witness does not lie, but a false witness breathes out lies." So, again, the contrast between honest evidence versus deceitful evidence, a faithful account versus an unfaithful account. So there's the intention where the witness is purposefully lying, purposefully being deceitful. That's the witness God hates. That's the one he detests. Now, why is it so dreadful? Why is it so detestable to God? Well, there's a number of reasons, and the first reason why it is so evil is because to lie is to blaspheme God's character and exalt in the character of Satan. So actually, I explained this point in the previous sermon on lying lips or a lying tongue. God in his nature, in his character, is true. He is truth. He is faithful. He is trustworthy in his character. Satan, by his character, is a liar. Jesus said when he lies, he's speaking his native language. So all lying and all falsehood, all deception is contrary to who God is. God never deceives. He never lies. He never is other than what is true and real. Therefore, lying and all falsehood being contrary to God's nature and being replaces reality with a deadly illusion, which binds people as the children of Satan. But that's true of all lying in general, not just giving false witness. So if I lie, we slander, we degrade, we reject, blaspheme God's character, and then we embrace the character of Satan. The second reason why giving false witness is evil is because the evidence given determines the defendant's future. So Proverbs chapter 25, verse 28 makes this rather interesting contrast and comparison. A man who bears false witness against his neighbor is like a war club or a sword or a sharp arrow. What a comparison. To give false witness is like an instrument of war, an assault weapon. To give false witness, to lie, to be deceitful about someone or an event is like taking a mace or a club, which is used in battle to break bones and crush skulls. It's like taking a sword, which is used to hack limbs off and heads off and disembowel. It's like taking an arrow and piercing people's torsos. That's rather violent and harsh and deadly. So giving false witness is like violently assaulting another with an assault weapon or a weapon of assault, a weapon of war that grievously injures and kills. See, here's what we have to remember. A number of the laws under Old Testament Israel were punishable by death. So if you gave false witness against an innocent person in a capital case that led to their conviction and to their being put to death, then your words, very well, you might as well have taken the mace and crushed their own head with your own hands, because that's what your words led to. Your false testimony ended up getting them killed. You killed them because of your false testimony. So these words that are false, a witness has grave responsibility. There's an example in 1 Kings chapter 21. Many of you may remember it. Queen Jezebel and King Ahab. Jezebel writes a letter to the elders of the city, and they say, put a feast or a banquet together, invite a man named Naboth, have two people stand up and give false testimony that he has sinned against the king and sinned against God, and then have him put to death. And that's what the elders of the city did. They got two worthless people to stand up and give false testimony. Then they convicted him of death and had him put to death. King David, Mordecai, Jesus, Stephen, and the Apostle Paul all suffered from false witnesses. People who were willing to lie, give a false account of what happened or what was said. I'm going to let Peter Craigie sum up this point. Peter Craigie writes, since the evidence given against the defendant in a case determined his future, It was vital that all evidence that was given was true evidence. The result of a false witness, if successful, would be the false punishment of a neighbor. And if unsuccessful, that is, if it was not convicted in the court, it would cast doubt by implication on the character of that neighbor, and its effects could be tantamount to slander and defamation of character. End of quote. And I think we have all heard of different cases and scenarios where false witnesses have come forward, and the defendant was not found guilty, but found innocent. But because of the guilt by association, their character was slandered. They lost their job. They were bankrupt. Families were ruined. Their careers were ruined because of false accusations of theft or violence or sexual assault or whatever. Proverbs 14:25 says this: a truthful witness saves lives. False witness destroys lives. That's why his witness is compared to a violent weapon. Third reason why it is so evil to give false witness is because false witness mocks and corrupts justice. It mocks and it corrupts justice. The elders, the rulers who met at the city gate, the judges and the juries of today are not omniscient. None of us know what all that happens. And so we, because of our limitations in our knowledge, we are dependent upon the witness to give accurate evidence so that we then may make right judgments and give true justice. The justice system depends upon upright, truthful witnesses. And if you don't have that, you won't have a just court system. You'll have an unjust or unjust court system. If the prosecution, if the defense, or the witnesses deliberately lie, there will be injustice in that the innocent will suffer and the guilty will go unpunished. Proverbs chapter 19, verse 28 says, a worthless witness mocks at justice, and the mouth of the wicked devours iniquity. And then we have Exodus chapter 23, verse 2, which Ted read for us. You shall not fall in with the many to do evil, nor shall you bear witness in a lawsuit, siding with the many, so as to pervert justice. So God hates giving false witness, because one, it assaults who God is. Not only is God true in his character, God is also just in his character. And so if we do not further justice through our speech and of our giving of a correct account of what happened or what was heard or what was said or what was done, we're mocking God's character, blaspheming it because he is just. We are jeopardizing the very lives of people, ruining their lives, bringing great harm into their lives. And third, we are mocking justice. So this is why God hates it, hates the one who gives false witness. Now, while the false witness can get away with evil temporarily, if they're not caught, and there's a reference in Deuteronomy 19, verses 18 and 19, where it says that if they get caught in the human system, they are to have done to them what they had intended to be done to the innocent party. And then by that way you purge the evil from the land. But if they don't get caught, God himself says he will exact justice from them for their false testimony in Proverbs 19, verses 5 and 9 and 21 and verse 28. Now, to wrap this up and pull it into today's century, I want to present to you three things, three pressures, three ways in which we are pressured to give false witness, to give a false account of something. And now this goes beyond the law court, because many of us will never be in a law court. But we are called to give an account at work, are we not, of what was done and when it was done and who did it. We're called to give an account at school of the work that we have done or not done and the quality of it, or who did what in a group situation. We're always called to give an account for things, an accurate account. But there are three things that pressure us to fudge the truth, to say, yeah, well, I think I'll just not say the whole truth, or I'll just say part of it, or I'll say I'll just deliberately outright lie and cover up. It doesn't matter whether it's in the family or the church or the sports team or the classroom. Here are the three things. Number one, popular sentiment or opinion. So Exodus chapter 23, verse 2, as I read, it said, "You shall not fall in with the many to do evil, nor shall you bear witness in a lawsuit siding with the many." So notice the connection there, or the phrases of not fall in with the many, or joining or siding with the many, the group. So popular opinion is often something that subtly causes us to just go along with the group, with the larger prevailing opinion, and we ignore the truth. Duane Garrett, an Old Testament professor whose writings I recommend, writes this: "The command of 23:2 concerns the manipulative power of popular sentiment. The witness can have his own testimony shaped by popular feelings, and in turn can further inflame those same popular passions. But the facts as one knows them, and not what the crowd believes or wants to believe, should always govern one's words." End of quotation. Now, if you were to look in Exodus 23, verse 3, it says, "Nor shall you be partial to a poor man in his lawsuit." Now, you got to keep that verse in balance with verse 6. "You shall not pervert the justice due to the poor in his lawsuit." But what verse 3 is speaking against is simply taking the side of the poor because he's poor, and therefore you show injustice to the one who isn't poor. You don't charge the rich by doing wrong simply because the one, or charge the rich by assume the rich is guilty because the one charging him with a crime or whatever is poor. Think of the stuff that is said about both the wealthy and the poor that comes out of our mouths and comes out of the Twitter feeds and the media. Think of these unsubstantiated facts that are just basically often lies. All the poor are lazy. That's not true. Yeah, some of them are lazy. But not all of them. I know some very hardworking poor. They're not poor because they're lazy. Think about how we like to say, or people like to say, the rich are all greedy. Oh, they all earned it dishonestly. That's not true. You want to know why the founders and the leaders of, what's the company? Who makes the iPhones? Apple, that's right. You want to know why they're rich? because you, the consumer, are quite happy to part with $1,000 for a phone every 2 years. You made them rich. Don't blame them for being greedy or dishonest. Consumers make a lot of people rich because of the choices you choose to spend your money. Now, yeah, are there greedy, wealthy people? Yes. Are there those who have got it dishonestly? Yes. But what happens in groupthink is we usually get controlled and guided by our feelings and this blanket statement. Well, all the rich are, you know, wrong, so let's start robbing from them to give to the poor. What do you mean rob from the rich to give to the poor? Two wrongs don't make a right. This is popular sentiment, popular opinion. If you've been listening to if you have Twitter and all that type of stuff, you'll just stop and think of the stuff that goes across those things. It's all popular opinion that's often unsubstantiated, and people are making judgments, giving on this false witness that is completely unsubstantiated. Even news, regular news corporations sometimes get caught up in that, and then they have to retract and go, oh, you know, we were wrong, that wasn't true. Because people are too quick to believe everything that the group says. This goes on into the second cause of false witness, personal prejudice. So Exodus 23, verses 4 through 5, it talks about meeting your enemy's ox or his donkey that's gotten lost or it's struggling under the load. When it says enemy here, it's not referring to, okay, this is written to the Jews. This isn't referring to an enemy of the Jew like a Philistine or an Assyrian. It's referring to your neighbor, the other person in town that you hate and they hate you and you don't get along. That's who the enemy is here. So, you know, the guy two doors down the road or whatever, or the person you don't get along with in your village. So if you see their donkey or their ox lost due to your personal prejudice and your personal hate, you might say, wow, that's great, his donkey's lost. Let's help it get lost a little more. Or it's suffering under its load. It's collapsed. He's overburdened. It's not going to survive the day in this heat. Let's just leave it there so it dies and he, you know, has to replace his donkey. No, don't do such a thing. You show kindness. You help. And you take the donkey back, the ox back to your neighbor, to your enemy. You see, the Israelite here cannot let their personal prejudice or their hate get in the way of properly treating possessions and livestock of the farmer they hate down the road. So it's so easy for us to have one set of rules for those we like and a whole different set of rules for those we don't like. Prejudice and hate motivates a lot of injustice. Prejudice and hate motivates a lot of slander, a lot of gossip, a lot of spewing of lies about others, which is all false witness. So whether you call it slander or whether you call it gossip, and whether it happens in the church or in this small town called Mount Forest, it's still a form of false witness because you're telling about things that never happened or are not true. Why do we do it? Personal prejudice and hate. And then thirdly, we can be pressured to give false witness because of personal gain. So in Exodus 23, verse 8, it talks about bribery or taking favors. And you shall take no bribe, for a bribe blinds the clear-sighted and subverts the cause of those who are in the right. Now, most of you probably would refuse an outright bribe. So if I was to give you an envelope of money, and tell you to do something or to join with me in something that is wrong, to give false witness against someone, you'd go, no way, and you'd refuse it. But this one can be very subtle. Garrett notes the word translated bribe here simply also means gift. And so as I thought about that, I thought, you know, we have reciprocal relationships in our friendships where we go back and forth for each other. We give to each other, we help each other in our need, and through our relationship and the history of our relationship, we've done things for other people, and they have done things for us. But there are times in our relationships where a friend or a person we know or an acquaintance will come to us, and they'll ask us, can you just not let people know what I did? Can you just cover up for me? Or they do something and it is being investigated and you think to yourself, well, you know, they've done all these things for me in the past, and I know what they did was wrong, I know the truth, but if I tell that, they're not going to really want to help me in the future, and this is going to jeopardize our relationship. So you give false witness. No, no, they're innocent. Very subtle, isn't it? They expect support, a vote for an event or action, but when it's examined, it has an element or two that is wrong, substandard, or bends the rules. And because of the past relationship of gift-giving back and forth, we think, let's just bend the rules this once. Let's cover up. Let's fudge the truth. Let's ignore the wrongdoing. So we give false witness. Wrong is covered up and someone else suffers. So there you have it. Popular sentiment, personal prejudice, and personal gain. Three insidious ways that pressure us to give false witness against others, that ruins others' lives, blasphemes God's character, and makes us like the devil. I close with these words from Colossians chapter 3, verses 9 to 10. Do not lie to one another, seeing that you have put off the old self with its practices, and have put on the new self, which is being renewed in the knowledge after the image of its creator. May the music team come and lead us in our song.